So hi, Ari.
Thanks so much for having me, Nikki.
It's great to speak to you, Ari. You're one of my favorite people. The research that you do is absolutely awesome. You know, I'm a huge fan, and I was super looking forward to this interview because it's on such an interesting topic. You've got a new book coming out, The Ultimate Guide to Red Light Therapy. It's coming out in July.
Yep.
That's right. Okay, it's fantastic. You introduced me to this whole topic. I wasn't aware of it before. I followed all your advice. I've got what you recommend. We'll talk more about that later. It's been awesome. So this is we're going to talk about red light therapy, what it is, how it can help people, how it works, and a little bit on kind of what people need to do to get the right thing, although they'll probably need to buy your book for that. But yeah, so tell us what is red light therapy?
Yeah, so well, first of all, there's an interesting comment that you made, which is that you, someone who is yourself a health expert who's been in this field for 20 years or something, how long have you been?
Up to 15 years, yeah.
15 years that you've been an expert working with, top physicians and on the front lines studying the research, and you hadn't even heard of this. And that is, and it's so fascinating, but that is the case for basically like everyone. The whole community of people, even in the holistic health community, vast majority of them have not heard of this technology. And yet, what's really interesting about that is you'd think that that then means like, oh, this must be some, new idea that is some wacky stuff that doesn't have any science to support it. It's not a new idea. It's been around for 30 years, and it's there's actually over 3,000 studies, peer-reviewed studies, showing that this works for all kinds of different benefits. And we're going to talk about what those are. But the science is, and there's a huge body of literature on this, and the studies are actually remarkable. They show huge benefits to so many different things. I mean, it almost seems like a panacea. And yet, like I said, we have this mountain of research, and yet hardly anybody's heard of it. So why is that? I think is an interesting place to start. And one of the reasons, couple reasons. One is that this technology used to be in the form of something called cold laser. And it goes by a few different names, but you used to have to use basically laser devices. And these laser devices were, oftentimes $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. And so they were not accessible to the general public. Like most regular people aren't ready to go spend 10 or 20 grand on a device that, to use in their home. It's just out of the question for most people. And then they were also being used in anti-aging clinics and health spas and things like that. But you had to pay 100 or 150 bucks per session to use these lights. So this technology's been around, like I said, for about 30 years. But because of that, like because people thought, oh, I can only get this in a physical therapy clinic or a chiropractor's office or an anti-aging spa or something like that, and it's going to cost a huge amount of money per session, it really made it so most people were not that interested in it. And then even among physicians, a lot of physicians have been slow to adopt it because one, the mechanisms of action have been a little bit in question. People don't know exactly how it works in the body, or people haven't known. We have a lot more clarity on that now. And people, I think a lot of physicians have been slow to adopt something that they are confused how it even works, and it just seems kind of weird, like shine red light on the body and you get healing and all these benefits. Like it seems kind of like a wacky idea. That's like, see, I mean, to most people, I think it seems almost like new agey nonsense. And then the other reason is more of a practical reason, which is just that the insurance reimbursements have been fairly low for physicians on that type of therapy versus many other types of therapy. So they use the ones that are more profitable to them. So for all these reasons, this awareness of this technology has been very slow to develop in both the medical community as well as the general public. But there have been some breakthroughs in just the last few years that now have made this accessible to everyone, and the science has developed to a point where we have a lot more clarity on what it's doing and how it works. So the awareness is growing rapidly, and it's really blowing up in popularity. But the basic idea of what this is you shine red light on your body. Okay, now that's like, you know, pretty simple in essence. Now, I should also point out that there's also something called near infrared light. And near infrared light is invisible to the human eye. It's just next to red light on the electromagnetic spectrum. And red and near infrared light are essentially synonymous in terms of the mechanisms of action, what they're actually doing to our body. So everything that I say in this interview applies to both red and near infrared light. They're basically identical. The only real difference, there are a few differences, but the main one is just for people to understand right now is red is visible red light. Near infrared is invisible to the human eye. You can see it with an infrared camera, but you can't, the human eye is not built to see that part of the electromagnetic spectrum. Now, one other aspect I should clarify, since I've mentioned the electromagnetic spectrum, is what is the electromagnetic spectrum? Well, it's like from one end of the spectrum, we have things like gamma rays and X-rays with very, very small wavelengths. And then we get into UV light and visible light. And we've all heard Roy G. Biv. You know, we learn the colors of the rainbow, Roy G. Biv, which it actually, going from this side of the spectrum that I'm working from now, it would be backwards. So it would be, we'd start with V, then I, so violet, indigo, blue, green, yellow, orange, red. Okay. And that's, those are, I mean, literally the those are the colors of light. So if you take a prism and you pass sunlight through it, you'll see the light be split into all of those colors. Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, indigo, violet, or blue, indigo, violet. So we have all of that spectrum of the visible light spectrum, and then it gets into near infrared, which I've already mentioned, and then far infrared, which we feel as heat, that's also invisible. And then it gets into much bigger wavelengths of like radio waves and things like that. So all of this exists on something called the electromagnetic spectrum. Visible light and near infrared light and far infrared light are a very small piece of that overall thing, but they have, like I said, there are thousands of studies now showing that they have absolutely profound and very powerful health benefits on human cells.
So this is fascinating. And it also, I was just thinking what you were saying about why it hasn't been more popular and more people don't realize, you know, most physicians don't get training in that, what you just talked about, the electromagnetic spectrum. They don't get training in physics. Mm-hmm. I think we're obsessed with, you know, biochemical, like popping a pill for health, or thinking that all our energy just comes from like proteins, fats and carbs in the diet, right? So yes. It's even in the, what you're doing is, it, which is why I also love your course and, you know, the Energy Blueprint course as well, because you really brought forward just the whole concept of like light, that we are electromagnetic beings, right? And that we run off the sun. We that's it. Is that right? Am I on track?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, this really is a profoundly different way of thinking and different paradigm of health compared to the way most people think about it, in the sense that light is something that most people just think of as like, oh, light is like I turn on the light switch in a room and light allows me to see things. And then if there's no light, it's dark and I can't see things. Like light and darkness, light is just the absence of darkness. But most people have no clue that light actually is influencing the function of their cells. And specific kinds of light have different kinds of impacts. There are actually five different types of bioactive light, bioactive meaning active on human cells. They affect the way your cells function. One that people will now make the connection with is UV light. So pretty much everybody knows it and put the pieces together in the way I just described. But everybody knows, like, you get sunlight, and the UV light from the sun hits your skin and allows your body to synthesize vitamin D, okay, which is a critical aspect of health. It's a substance that, it's a hormone that, not a vitamin actually, it's a hormone that regulates over 2,000 genes. So, you know, just that alone is telling you that light is a pretty important aspect of health. And these are not just unimportant, you know, sort of irrelevant genes. These regulating hugely important genes that are, you know, playing a major role in our health and our energy levels and our longevity and resistance to disease. In addition to that, we also have another one that people will be somewhat familiar with is blue light. And blue light, like, for example, when we look up at the sky and we see a blue sky, that is visible blue light entering our eyeballs. Well, blue light, specifically the wavelengths of blue light, feed back through our eyes, through the optic nerve, back into our brain, and they actually send signals to the circadian clock in our brain that regulates our circadian rhythm, our sleep-wake cycle, which in turn affects dozens of different neurotransmitters and hormones and all kinds of aspects of our physiology, from our energy levels to our appetite to our caloric expenditure to our wakefulness to our sleepiness. I mean, and far beyond that. I mean, it's affecting a huge number of aspects of our hormones and our health. So UV light and blue light, just through those two mechanisms, are already having a huge impact on our health. Then we have far infrared, which again, we feel as heat. And we have things like far infrared saunas, or when we go out in the sun and we feel the sun heating up our body, a big part of that is the far infrared energy penetrating through our skin and actually heating us up from the inside. This is important. It affects blood vessel function and circulation, and also detoxification, especially if it's making you sweat. This is a powerful way that we detoxify. That's why far infrared saunas can be so beneficial. And there's a huge body of literature just on the effects of far infrared energy on our health as well. And far infrared saunas certainly have lots of benefits. So that's three of the five bioactive kinds of light. And then there's red and near infrared, which we can basically lump together in the same category. Even though they're two different types of light, they have the same effects. The only difference, again, is near infrared is invisible to the human eye, and the other difference is it penetrates a little bit deeper in our body than visible red light does. So what those do is they actually, there's a few different mechanisms we can talk about here, and sort of the way I look at it is, you know, it's kind of a funny topic, because if you go look at a textbook, and there are certain textbooks written on this, especially by a Harvard professor named Michael Hamblin, who's a very prominent researcher in the field. But there are literally like three dozen different biochemicals and pathways that are affected by red and near infrared light exposure. So I could tell you about, you know, this particular molecule and that particular molecule, and, you know, you can look at it from that perspective. But I like to kind of simplify things and reduce the effects down, or the mechanisms down, to two main pathways. One is the effects directly on mitochondrial energy production. So red and near infrared light actually penetrate through our skin and get down into our bodies. They can actually penetrate over about 2 inches into our bodies. So it's not just like UV light where it's hitting the skin and then all the energy is absorbed in the skin. They're actually getting down into our bodies, and they can affect things. They can affect bone function. They can even penetrate through the bone of your skull and affect brain function directly, muscle function, tendons, fat, you know, basically all of the tissues that they can reach within 2 inches. And they also have some systemic effects, which we can get into by affecting compounds in the blood as well. So it can, by virtue of that, can affect the whole body. But the mechanism here, the first one, is how it affects mitochondria directly. So that light is actually getting into your cells and then acting directly on the mitochondria, which are the energy producing units of the cell. They are the, in biology classes in high school and college, they teach you that they're the powerhouses of the cell, but they're the cellular engine. This is what's producing the energy that your cells run on. So what, and the mechanisms have actually been elucidated for the most part. Basically what is going on is that the red and near infrared light hits the mitochondrial membrane, and it hits a particular part of what's called the respiratory chain, on the, or the electron transport chain on the mitochondria, which is the part that kind of is responsible for allowing the mitochondria to produce energy. It kind of passes electrons down this thing, and then ultimately at the end of it pumps out ATP, adenosine triphosphate, which is what our cells run on. That is cellular energy. So there's a part of the respiratory complex, the electron transport chain in mitochondria, called cytochrome C oxidase. And cytochrome C oxidase is a photoacceptor. It is something that actually accepts the energy from light photons and then uses that energy to help create electrons and pass those electrons down, which ultimately allows the mitochondria to produce energy more efficiently. Now, cytochrome C oxidase needs to bind to oxygen in order to do that well. One of the problems is in certain kinds of stress states or disease states, nitric oxide, which is NO instead of just O2, builds up in the cell and in the mitochondria in a way that it binds to cytochrome C oxidase and blocks oxygen from getting in and binding to cytochrome C oxidase. And by blocking it, it decreases mitochondrial energy production. What red light and near infrared light do is that they basically cause what's called photodissociation of the nitric oxide. So they basically boot that nitric oxide out and allow oxygen to come in and bind to the mitochondria, to cytochrome C oxidase, and get the mitochondria pumping out energy more efficiently. And this has been studied in numerous experiments now in both in vitro and in vivo, and we know very definitively at this point that at least the primary mechanism of red and near infrared light appears to be that it enhances mitochondrial energy production. So that itself is why this, you know, when you look at the research and you're like, you see all these things about red infrared and near infrared light enhance thyroid health and enhance brain health and enhance muscle performance and enhance mood and cognitive function and enhance tendon healing and diabetic ulcers. And, you know, you see all these things that are on seemingly different parts of the body and different systems. And you're like, how could one therapy do all of this and have so many benefits on different parts of the body? It almost seems like too good to be true. It seems like a panacea and like snake oil. But the answer is simple. It's because all of those tissues, whether they're skin cells or brain cells or heart cells or whatever, they all ultimately rely on ATP, energy produced by the mitochondria. So if you can facilitate that process and help the cells produce more energy, they, whatever it is they do, whether it's liver cells that are detoxifying or heart cells or muscle cells that are, you know, doing reps of weightlifting, whatever it is, they will work better if they have more energy available to them. So that's the fundamental mechanism. And forgive me if I'm rambling on too long, feel free to interrupt me, but that,
no, I just wanted to let you, I was letting you go because that it's brilliant. It's a super explanation, and it's still amazing to me. It's still awesome to me to consider that, like, the core of our energy production absolutely fundamentally requires light. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a whole paradigm shift, isn't it? It's amazing and awesome, and it's great that you're doing this work and getting this message out there to a much wider audience. Red light is, presumably it is part of sunlight. Can we get exposure to red light by getting sunlight?
Yes, absolutely. So in a way, and this is something I actually wrote in the book, you know, we have all these red and fancy red and near infrared light devices. The truth is probably that if we all lived in the lifestyles that humans are meant to live, and we lived like our hunter-gatherer ancestors, and where we're outdoors for hours and hours and hours every day, getting lots of sun on our bodies, we probably wouldn't need red and near infrared light devices. We'd probably be getting most of the benefits, at least the systemic benefits that you get from red and near infrared light irradiating the bloodstream through your blood vessels. We'd certainly be getting those and probably a lot of the other benefits, which would make a lot of this discussion obsolete, honestly. And so for anybody listening, hey, if you're a hunter-gatherer and you spend hours a day outdoors in the sun, or you don't necessarily need to be a hunter-gatherer, but let's say you're a construction worker, you know, you probably maybe don't even need to be listening to this. But if you're not, if you're the typical person who spends most of your day indoors, or you live in a place that's not very sunny, then you almost certainly stand to benefit tremendously by through red and near infrared light therapy. I also give a kind of a hypothetical thought experiment. I wish that I could say this was a real experiment, but it hasn't been studied. But I basically said, hey, if you were to apply a red and near infrared light device to a hunter-gatherer versus a typical Westerner living an indoor life, you'd probably see that the effect size of the benefits are way, way less on the hunter-gatherer than they are on the average Westerner. Because, again, that person's already probably mostly sufficient in red and near infrared light. And I also want to point out my use of words here. I see red and near infrared light as a necessary nutrient for human health. And in much the same way that, you know, eating your greens and getting your various B vitamins and, you know, various minerals and things like that, in the same way that those are necessary nutrients, we need all of these bioactive frequencies of light, UV, blue, far infrared, red, and near infrared. We need all of them for our physiology to operate properly. And in the same way that if you are magnesium deficient or deficient in folate or whatever, your body starts to not operate properly and certain processes start to not function well, the same exact thing happens when you don't get enough of these bioactive frequencies of light. You get all sorts of problems. Like I said, just UV light and vitamin D alone regulates 2,000 genes. Red and near infrared light are affecting the energy production in your mitochondria and almost every cell in your body. So these are very big deals. And I want to also kind of drive this point home by saying that if we look at light and our intake of light nutrients in the same way that we look at food, most people's light diet is the equivalent of eating an all McDonald's and Twinkies diet. Okay, it's that bad. It is horrific in terms of most people's light exposure habits on a daily basis is literally the equivalent of Twinkies and McDonald's all day for every meal.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? A massive vitamin L deficiency.
Yes, exactly.
Light deficiency. Yeah, it's such a paradigm shift. We're so obsessed with diet, and mm-hmm. it really is just one small part of this overall picture. It's so interesting, yeah, light, and it's good to know it really backs up the fact that, you know, we're humans, we don't live in a vacuum, and it's so natural that, of course, we need sunlight for health. Like, it should, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, nature's backing that up. It's the same with I mentioned pulse electromagnetic frequencies. We need the earth frequencies as well. And when we don't get those, we need the earth, we need the sun, we need good water. Actually, I was just going to ask you one other thing as well about mechanisms.
Yes.
What about, maybe it's a little bit more fringe, but red and infrared light in terms of the impact on the water in our body. It was structured.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that another mechanism?
Structure? Yeah, I'm glad you brought it back to this because I wanted to talk a little bit more mechanisms. So there's one other, I would say, well-defined mechanism, and then there are two that I put in the category of still somewhat unproven but potential mechanisms that are really fascinating. So the other proven mechanism is hormesis, and hormesis is something that I talk about a lot. It's one of my big passions. To summarize it very quickly, it's basically the concept of a temporary, transient metabolic stress that stimulates our body to undergo adaptations that ultimately confer health benefits. So this seems very counterintuitive, like we're subjecting our body to something that's stressful, which most of us associate that word stress with bad things, but we're subjecting it to something that's stressful in order to get health benefits. So it seems like kind of a wacky abstract idea, but actually pretty much everybody listening to this is already familiar with this concept more than they realize, because exercise, physical exercise, works on that principle of hormesis. It is actually a temporary metabolic stressor that causes damage and inflammation and stresses out our cells like crazy and causes a buildup of lots of free radicals. But when applied in the right dose systematically, it becomes something that creates adaptations in our cells, stimulates our cells to adapt, to make adaptations that ultimately make them way more resilient to stressors. And that is why we have a mountain of thousands of scientific studies showing that exercise is associated with, you know, prevention of all sorts of diseases, not just muscular diseases, but of brain diseases, of heart diseases, of lung diseases, of, you know, of anxiety and depression and, you know, like dozens of different diseases. And it's fundamentally because it's a stressor, not because it's intrinsically beneficial, but because it's a stressor that stimulates these adaptations that ultimately confer resilience and resistance to disease. So there are, it's not just exercise that does this. There are a number of other things that stimulate these hormetic pathways. Fasting is another one. Heat is another one. Cold is another one. Certain kinds of phytochemicals will also do it as well. We also have what's called hypoxia, like breath holding exercises or going to altitude and things like that will create these effects. And certain kinds of light will do it. So UV light has some hormetic effects, though it's more localized in the skin, because it doesn't penetrate deeply. And red infrared and near infrared light also have hormetic effects on our cells. They transiently stress our cells and actually create free radicals and create some inflammation transiently in a very low dose in a way that stimulates our cells to adapt and become more resilient and resistant to stress. And it does this through a number of different mechanisms. One is down-regulating an inflammatory pathway called NF-kappa-B. And then in tandem with that, we also have the activation of a pathway called NRF2, which basically helps build up something called the ARE, the antioxidant response element in our cells. And this is basically our internal antioxidant and anti-inflammatory defense system. And basically, when we build that up, that is the fundamental thing that makes our cells and our mitochondria much stronger and more resilient and resistant to all kinds of stressors, not just the stressor of red and near infrared light, but also stressors like toxins, psychological stress, and so on. This is literally how you build resilience at the cellular level. So hormesis is the second way near infrared light. And then there's two really fascinating potential mechanisms. One is the one that you were getting at, which is kind of around Gerald Pollack's work. And there's also some other researchers in this field that have been really interested in looking at what's going on with the water in our cells. And, you know, for a long time, for decades, maybe you could say centuries, scientists have kind of just looked at cells as like a bag of water, and the water is just there to just to fill the cell. It doesn't really do anything. And it just allows, it's just a medium for the chemicals and things like that to float around and the different organelles of the cells to do their work. It's just this sort of liquid background that this is inanimate and not doing anything. Well, there's been a lot of research in the last several years around maybe that water is not just, maybe cells aren't just a bag of water, but that water is actually doing important things inside of the cells. And Gerald Pollack's work has shown basically that light can affect water and the literally the chemical structure of water in a way that creates a buildup of negative charges around basically any area where water is next to what's called a hydrophilic surface. So hydrophilic and hydrophobic, it has to do with the chemical nature of the compound. It's basically water loving or water fearing, you could say. But like if you mix oil and water, we know that oil floats on water. That's because it's a hydrophobic substance. It doesn't just mix with the water, right? Well, our cells, for the most part, tend to be hydrophilic in terms of their membranes. So basically what they're getting at is that there seems to be a buildup of negative charges of this, what he's calling exclusion zone water or easy water around the membranes in our cells. And this buildup of this kind of charge separation of negative charges near the membranes, positive charges away from it, basically acts like a battery. It creates a potential for energy and potential for work to be done. And there are, in fact, so that there's a lot of speculatory research around this right now. And then there's some interesting research that's somewhat confirming this. So there's one study not done by Gerald Pollack, but done by another group where they looked at basically the mitochondrial, basically the motor on mitochondria that actually pumps out ATP. It's called the mitochondrial ATP synthase pump. And what they found is that that rotor, I mean, it's literally a physical rotary little machine in our mitochondrial membranes. It actually spins easier with less resistance depending on the water viscosity around it. So what they did is that they looked at the water viscosity and how it's changed by red and near infrared light exposure, and showed that red and near infrared light exposure literally makes the water more slippery and thinner, so that the ATP synthase pump on the mitochondria can spin easier and pump out energy more efficiently. So basically, in addition to that, that cytochrome C oxidase pathway in the mitochondria that I mentioned earlier, there's also this intriguing possibility that red and near infrared light may be acting throughout the cell on the all the water in the cell to create this charge separation and create this kind of, you know, affect the water viscosity and affect maybe other aspects of function in the cell by virtue of kind of building up this easy water inside of the cell.
So you just said more slippery and thinner. So the water is more slippery and thinner. Mm-hmm. And it's really, again, I think it's amazing again that everything that when we get exposed to sauna, sunlight, it's making the water in our blood more slippery and thinner. So mm-hmm. our circulation's better, everything's flowing better in the capillaries, which I think it was Gilbert Ling actually showed, maybe you'll correct me on this, that the heart wouldn't have, and all the mitochondria in the heart wouldn't have been strong enough to pump the blood around anyway, all the way to the ends of the capillaries. But when you have EZ water, it's basically that is creating the movement of flow at the, you know, at the peripheral levels. I don't know if you came across that research.
Yes, you're mixing up a couple people, but the gist of what you're saying is correct. So I actually forget the guy who said that, but there's some, and I actually quote this in the Energy Blueprint program, but I haven't looked at it in a long time, but it's something to the effect of what you said, that like, if you were to unravel all of the capillaries in your body, there's just no way that the force of the heart, and we can actually measure the force of the heart. There's no way that the force of the heart is able to pump blood through all of those tubes just through the mechanical action of the heart alone. And basically what they're getting at is that there is an assist action through this easy water that's basically facilitating flow of water through the capillaries. And this has been demonstrated in studies where they've put little tubes submerged in water that are hydrophilic substances, much like our capillaries are. and then basically just shined light on it and showed that water will start naturally flowing through the tube under its own accord just by applying light energy to that.
It's amazing. There you have it. It's in black and white, isn't it?
There's one other thing that you were getting at with Gilbert Ling. This is a little bit more geeky in detail, but part of what's going on in the membranes of our cells is that membranes have to maintain ion gradients. Certain concentrations of minerals, you know, sodium, potassium, calcium, things like that, inside versus outside the cells. And sometimes there are very high concentrations of minerals inside or outside the cell. And across that membrane, they have to maintain those gradients for the cell to function properly, for the blood to have the right concentration or the extracellular fluid to have the right concentration of minerals. They all need the right concentration of minerals and ions to function well. That's across a membrane. Now, naturally, just if there were no other things going on, if you just had like a high concentration of, let's say, potassium and low sodium on one side, and then the opposite, high sodium on one side and low potassium on the other side of a membrane. If you just let that system, you know, do its thing on its own, you're going to get passive diffusion and an equalizing of these gradients. Okay. So what we know is that there are pumps for ions inside of our cell membranes, and even pumps for ions in the organelles inside of our cells. So like the mitochondria needs a certain gradient of ions, and the Golgi apparatus needs, and the ribosomes need, and the nucleus needs, right? So they all have their own little membranes, and they all need to maintain the proper ion gradients. So we have all these trillions of cells, and each cell has, I don't know the actual number, hundreds or thousands, probably thousands of little ion pumps that are active at any moment doing work to pump certain ions out, pump certain ions in across these membranes to maintain these gradients all of the time, even when we're at rest. And we know that certain of them have been studied very, very well, like the sodium potassium ATPase pump in particular has been studied very well. And the thing is, these pumps, in order for them to do work, they require energy. They require ATP, so which again is produced primarily by the mitochondria, almost entirely by the mitochondria. So Gilbert Ling did some interesting calculations where he basically said, we know here's how many pumps are at the membrane, and in order to maintain these ion gradients, they're using up. He actually did the math and said, here's how much ATP they would actually require to maintain these ion gradients. And then that's not even including all the pumps on all the different organelles inside of each cell, but just the pumps at the cell membrane alone. Basically, once he did the math, figured out that they would require way more ATP than the cell is actually generating if the ion gradients were just maintained through the action of these ATP requiring ion pumps. So basically, what I'm getting at is that this layer of charged water, exclusion zone water, the reason it's called exclusion zone is that it excludes, and it excludes things like ions, so that the cell can actually maintain these ion gradients properly without requiring huge amounts of ATP for all these different pumps to do all of this work. Just the water itself is doing some of the work of maintaining these ion gradients. But that's what Gilbert Ling was getting at. And that's just another layer of how the water inside the cells may be really, really important to our health. And just to connect one last dot, light, again, especially red and near infrared light, causes that exclusion zone to grow. So the energy from light is making bigger exclusion zones of water in our cells and creating more of that potential energy and more of that sort of battery in the cell.
Hence things like sunlight, sauna, actually doing red light. And I want to talk about that next. Like what are the devices out there? And ultimately people should read your book for that, but maybe you can cover that a little bit.
Yes.
We just also mentioned, like, so that's also why vegetable juicing is full of structured water and it's full of light. So it's how to increase your light quotient is drinking vegetable juices, right? I just think that's...
There's one other fascinating layer to that. And real quick, a funny story, but when I was in high school, my biology teacher was this, we thought she was like the craziest old lady in the world. And we used to just make fun of her relentlessly because she was like this hippie, you know, health conscious girl who back in, this was in the early 90s, who was doing vegetable juicing. And then she would juice vegetables and she would drink green juices, which were high school kids. We thought was totally disgusting. And then she'd go out in the sun and she'd sunbathe. And she was like convinced that she was doing some like photosynthesis type of thing. Like she was able to drink the chlorophyll and that she could photosynthesize like plants. And we just thought it was the most hilarious thing in the world that like, here's our crazy biology teacher who thinks she's a plant and thinks she can photosynthesize. So here's the really interesting thing related to what you're just talking about. You were talking about it from one angle, which is that plants may have this easy water that we can drink and kind of absorb that easy water directly. Maybe the case still needs to be studied, but is an interesting line of thinking that I know Gerald Pollack himself is very intrigued by. But there is another, one more potential mechanism of red and near infrared light that's fascinating, which is a couple years ago, it was shown that mammalian cells, humans are mammals, by the way, so we have mammalian cells, but other mammals do as well, can use chlorophyll metabolites, certain breakdown products of when we consume chlorophyll in the diet, our metabolism breaks them down and we produce certain metabolites of that chlorophyll that then get incorporated into our cells. Then those chlorophyll metabolites actually do have the power to interact with red and near infrared light specifically, because that's the kind of light that actually penetrates deepest in our body, in order to facilitate energy production by our mitochondria. So chlorophyll byproducts or chlorophyll metabolites can actually interact with light, including sunlight, but red and near infrared light in a way that actually helps our cells produce more energy.
That's a bit of photosynthesis.
Exactly. Yeah, it's quite interesting when you think about that, because it's almost analogous. It's not the exact same chemical process as photosynthesis, but human cells are using light to produce energy inside of the cell, which is, again, totally, you know, very a whole new paradigm of health. We have, you know, in biology, you have these different classifications of organisms. You have heterotrophs and autotrophs. Autotrophs mean they produce their own energy. So like plants that photosynthesize produce their own energy. Heterotrophs need to eat other things, eat plants or eat animals in order to acquire energy. And it's always been thought that humans are heterotrophs and we get all of our energy by eating stuff. But it turns out that we're actually probably more in this other third classification of what are called mixotrophs or photoheterotrophs, where we can acquire, we do certainly acquire lots of our energy, if not most of our energy, from things we eat. But we our cells do seem to be able to get some energy from light, which is kind of an amazing thing and really a revolution in most people's thinking.
Yeah, totally. And your crazy biology teacher wasn't so crazy.
Exactly. That's the moral of the story, is that we were the idiots and she was the smart one.
So it's brilliant. It's so interesting. So let's just talk on this last question I have for you. Like in terms of the devices out there, because it's a minefield, right? And there's like LEDs that now versus lasers. And there's a lot of probably stuff that doesn't work properly out there. And I know you've done tons of research. So yeah. Do you want to just give like an overview as best you can of kind of what's out there? And ultimately, we should just get people to get your book to know what to get, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm happy to give information here. You know, in the book, I give a lot of details around all the science around all the different benefits that have been proven for for red and near infrared light. So brain optimization, preventing or treating that, you know, the research showing it can prevent or treat neurological diseases or depression or anxiety, enhance cognitive function. And I'll just kind of list off some of these. Another big area of benefit is skin anti-aging and cellulite reduction. That's why it's so common in anti-aging clinics, is it really has profound effects in enhancing collagen production in the skin, and really has the research on this is actually amazing how profound of an effect it has on skin anti-aging. Also, one of the few things that is actually proven to actually truly work to decrease cellulite. Most things on the market that make claims around that don't actually work. Fat loss, hair regrowth, wound healing, tendon healing, enhancing muscle performance, strength, endurance, adaptations to exercise. So doing it in tandem with exercise, this is actually an area that I think is really most impressive. The studies that have used red light in tandem with exercise interventions, as opposed to just the exercise or exercise and diet interventions by themselves without red light, adding the red light into it oftentimes doubles or nearly doubles the adaptations in terms of fat loss, in terms of muscle gain, in terms of improvements in insulin sensitivity. I mean, it massively amplifies the benefits that you get from exercise, and even can enhance your performance during exercise and, you know, and so on. Then you also have, one other thing I'll mention that might be relevant to a lot of people listening is there's some really great research around Hashimoto's hypothyroidism, where they've used it there. Really remarkable research where they've shown huge reductions in thyroid antibodies, and even a large portion of people, some studies showing like 17%, others close to 40% of people able to get off thyroid medications entirely. Just from doing red light or near infrared light therapy on the thyroid gland. So that gives you people an overview of some of the research around what kinds of benefits they can get from red and near infrared light therapy. But I digressed a little bit there. So to get back to your question around devices. So as I mentioned at the beginning, it used to mainly be laser devices that were out there, which were really, really expensive. And also lasers have some drawbacks related to the devices that are now more commonly used, which are that they tend to be very small and they're only capable of being used on very small areas of the body at any given time. Whereas a lot of the bigger LED panel devices can treat big areas of your body at once. There's even one product that's made by a laser company. They used to predominantly make lasers called Thor lasers, very, very good, high quality company. They're now making a bed with LEDs. That's like, think of like a tanning bed style thing, but the whole thing is filled with LEDs that instead of, you know, UV light, like a tanning bed, it's all red and near infrared LEDs, and on the whole bottom of it and the whole top. So you can irradiate the entire body from head to toe all at once. The only problem with those devices is they're $100,000, or I think a little over $100,000. So,
oh my God, I was going to say I want one, but like, in a way, it's just sunlight. Yeah. It's $100,000 sunshine, isn't it? We're paying for sunshine, right?
Well, kind of. You know, I should mention this because we talked a bit about it earlier, but there are some targeted benefits that you can get from red and near infrared light that you probably cannot get from just sunbathing. A couple reasons why. One is that you don't have UV in there, so that you're not going to get, like, sunlight doesn't necessarily have the anti-aging effects that pure red and near infrared light have on the skin in particular, because the UV is creating some damaging effect at the same time. I'm a big fan of sun exposure, don't get me wrong, but I don't think that you could make the same skin anti-aging claims for sun exposure that you can for red and near infrared light. So having that isolated red and near infrared light, I think, is important. Also, the power output is vastly different. So with a lot of these devices, you can get very high power output localized on specific parts of your bodies, and get very deep penetration that you probably are just not going to get with sun exposure. You can also control the dose very precisely, which is also important. So yes and no, but so for a long time, a lot of people in this space thought, oh, you know, you can only get these benefits from laser devices, specifically from all these fancy laser devices that are $10,000 and $20,000 and so on. And it's turned out that they were wrong, and that every study that has actually put it to the test and tested laser versus the same wavelengths of light, you know, with a similar dose, but applied from just a simple LED panel. That's what's called non-coherent light. It's not in a focused laser beam coherent light. It's just light that's spread out. That of equivalent parameters basically creates the same biological effects. So you don't need a $10,000 or $20,000 laser. You can get these effects from an LED panel that costs $400 or $500. Woo-hoo. Okay. So that's pretty cool. Now you do have to spend some money. And I will also issue a warning here that there are some devices on the market that are $50, or, you know, you buy this bulb for $37 or whatever, or even a lot of devices that are $200 and $300 that are vastly underpowered and will not have the right effects or any effects at all. This is really important. I wasted thousands of dollars on my own money early on before I understood this, before I actually did the math and understood the math of the dosing parameters and what levels of power of the light are needed to actually create therapeutic effects. But you need a relatively high power light, and you also need it to be of a decent size so that you can treat a large portion of your body at once. So what I mean by that is, you know, just I'll give one example. Like one light I bought for like $175 many years ago before I understood this was like a light that was about palm sized, you know, it was about that big. And I'm like, oh, great. It's a red light, you know, and it's got red LEDs and they're even at the right wavelength. And they need to be at the right wavelength and the right power intensity, by the way. But so it was a red LED light at the right wavelengths. But what I didn't understand is that it had 1/10 of the power that is needed to create the right effects. And at the same time, by being so small, I can only treat a very small portion of my body at once, as opposed to a much bigger LED panel, that is of the right power that I can treat my entire front torso at once, or my entire back, or I can get two of them and treat my entire body at once. Kind of like that $100,000 piece of equipment I mentioned earlier, but you can honestly do the same thing by getting two $500 big LED panels. So you could probably save $99,000 there. But so yeah, basically getting a device of the right power is very, very important. There are a few good LED panel companies out there now. Red Rush by Red Therapy Co., Platinum Therapy Lights, Juve, Red Light Man. Those are the big four. Juve is the most popular one. They've been around the longest. They're most kind of established. They've also done the most advertising, and so they're the most well-known right now. They've done a good marketing job, and they make a pretty high-quality light. But the Platinum and especially the Red Rush, I think the Red Rush are the highest quality lights on the market. So those are the ones that I get. In my book, I also give discount codes, and I, more importantly, I give very detailed protocols and instructions for how to use these lights for all those different kinds of purposes, whether you want to use it for fat loss or enhancing cognitive performance or combating neurological disease or hypothyroidism and so on. There's all these different benefits, and I kind of give a breakdown of all the specific protocols and kind of everything that you need to know of how to actually use it. But yeah, the basic gist of it is I don't think you need to get a fancy, very expensive laser light. Get a big, powerful LED unit from one of the companies that I just mentioned, and that will pretty much be able to give you everything you need. There are also a couple specialty devices. One in particular that's worth mentioning is the V-Lite Neuro, or V-Lite Neuro. It's V-I-E Lite is the brand. They make a couple devices. One is an intranasal device, which you stick up your nose and kind of clip to your nostril. That one I do not recommend. The claim is that it's kind of irradiating your brain through your nostril. According to Michael Hamblin, who's that professor at Harvard, one of the world's most respected authorities on this subject, he basically kind of brushed off the idea that it's actually getting into the brain. He says the light is not nearly powerful enough to actually do that. But they have another device. So I would not recommend that one. They have another device that goes on the whole head and has LED little light sections that kind of can kind of work in through your hairs and get to the base of the follicles and then irradiate there. The reason that's important is because hair will block the light. So you, for treating the brain specifically, it's a good idea to have something that can get, you know, light through the skull in a very targeted way. You can do it through the forehead, but unless you're bald, you're limited a little bit in where you can apply it with a standard LED light. So if you're interested in treating the brain specifically, that's where something like a specialty device like the V-Lite Neuro may also be a good idea. But for almost all those other applications, skin anti-aging, fat loss, muscle gain, everything else I just mentioned that goes with red and near infrared light therapy, the LED lights are perfectly wonderful.
So Ari, thank you so much. It was a fantastic interview. I think you're writing about such a fascinating subject. The research you've done is getting this therapy out there. It's such a powerful therapy. Thank you so much for the work that you do. And I really recommend people buy your book, obviously, because that last bit you talked about, it is really critical to get the dosing right. You can, you know, less is more with red light, and there's a way of, like, you could waste a lot of money and not do it right. So you've really gone into so much depth in all of that too. And I followed your recommendations. I bought the thing that you recommended, and I totally have personally benefited big time all the way back from September. It worked quite subtly for me, but it wasn't like a quick hit, but like, it's not meant to be. It's not a stimulant like caffeine. It was something I stuck with every day, and my health has been nothing but better and better and better. I know that was part of what's brought me back to 100% of health again and feeling great again as well. So thank you so much, Ari. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Nikki. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.